Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Last week, we spoke to Crystal Swing singer Derv Le Burke O'Connor. We spoke to Joe, other parents who got in touch with us to tell us about their children with autism.
Paul is 9 years old and he has a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. So he's totally nonverbal and he has an intellectual disability. So Paul would be a full-time care 24/7 around the clock. He needs help and support with absolutely everything, dressing himself, toileting, brushing his teeth, washing his hands, feeding him. Routine is just everything. So any little change can really, really upset him.
When you have a child on this path, you know, there's the everyday physical looking after your child, which is exhausting. There's also then the logistics of the long-term care and help and assistance for your child, which my wife has been an absolute godsend, because that's our forte. But the support mechanisms out there, negligible. The delays in them or the prognosis takes so long that unless you're proactive and unless you're physically doing it yourself and then, you know, engaging in that proactively, your child just get completely lost.
That's just Joe and Dervla, just two of the many parents who spoke to us last week on the programme. And that's what this show is. It's a platform for you to share your thoughts and stories and experiences with us. And many more parents did that over the weekend, asking us to continue to shine a light on, as they describe it, the lack of services that are available. Anthony is with me on the line today. Anthony, you're very welcome to the programme. Tell us a little bit about your son.
Hi, Andrea. Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us.
My son is nine, very similar to Dervla. He's nonverbal. We have to do everything for him, dress him, feed him, wash him, and he's still in nappies as well. And there's a slight difference with Owen is that he's a twin, so but they're non-identical. And his brother seems to be a normal kid growing up, as you would expect. That he doesn't have autism. And I have three other older girls, so we have a five in the family. It's quite busy. But we went through all the same things as Devla went through, and in the beginning, when you get that diagnosis, because he was a twin, I kind of knew there was something not right. Actually, it was strange, because up to the age of one, the two of them were acting as normal, progressing as you would expect.
Same milestones and
same old stuff. And then when he got to one, we kind of saw a change. He kind of regressed into himself. There wasn't any eye contact. Whereas Liam, his brother Liam, would progress as you would expect. And he wouldn't come to us. He wouldn't recognize his name, all that kind of stuff. So then we went to get an assessment. And it was probably just before COVID kicked in. And we were told there's going to be a 2-year waiting list just to get him assessed for the early intervention and treatment. So we went and got it privately done to try and speed up the process. And I had a diagnosis privately, and I thought, grand, I'll skip the early initial assessment and go on the waiting list then for treatment. But unfortunately, the HSC wouldn't accept his professional clinical diagnosis, even though the place we went to get that done was the same place that the HSC outsourced some of their own tests to. So we got it in the same place.
Nice.
But they said, no, they have to go through their own so they can see what therapies he might need.
Yeah, okay.
So even though I had a diagnosis, I still had to go through the whole 2 years of trying to get all these different tests done. And because it was over COVID, things were a bit awkward. So finally, when he was about probably 3.5, 4, he got the official HSE diagnosis. And then I got a letter which shocked me, and they said that, oh yeah, we have your diagnosis, blah, 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 etc. And there's, unfortunately, it's going to be a 48-month waiting list for any kind of therapies.
48 months?
That was 4 years. So we've been on this early intervention, so-called early intervention, which I think they scrapped it now. They call it something else now. It's a disability network, I think they call it. But it was pointless. It's supposed to be early intervention to get them some intervention early on to try and help improve his life.
If you're waiting 4 years,
but you're waiting 4 years, you're past the time of early intervention before you even get on any list. So we got nothing from no treatment for Owen. And it was a struggle, like all the way through, as everyone says on previously last week, to do anything, to get anything, to get a school place, to get early childcare. And he needs special childcare. He needs special autism specific childcare, where there's only six people in a class, for example, and you have specially trained childcare people that know about autism. They have training to do it, and there's very few of them around. Otherwise, you go into a normal daycare centre and they have like an SNA, I think they call it AIMS, an AIM, where they just assist the main teachers there, but they're not trained. And so he wouldn't have learned anything special. I was just lucky. I was blessed. I got a place in this specialised school. It was the last minute thing. They rang me up and said, oh, we have a cancellation. And that changed them, because they're all specialised in that area. And because we weren't getting anything from him at that age when he was three. So they taught him how to...
Do you have even, like now at this point, Anthony has owned it at 9 years of age. Like, has he... are there more supports available to him now?
So, no, he hasn't got any specialised one-to-one treatment. So he's 9 years old, and we got him officially diagnosed at two, and then we had to get the HSE diagnosis at four, and he still hasn't had a one-to-one specialist. Now, I've got engagement. Since we had to move house, because with the twins coming, you have to get a bigger house, a bigger car, seven seater, not the usual. There's five kids now. So we moved, and I moved back into my own family home. But because I moved location, I moved into a different clinic area. So I was back on the waiting list again. But thankfully, I spoke to them and explained that. And they said, oh, no, we're going to take you on board. And after a few months, I got on board. And they're very helpful, very engaging. The staff there are brilliant, but their lack of resources. They still don't have a psychology person there. And that's since I got on them 2 years ago, since we moved here. I've been on courses. So that's one thing they try and do. They send the families on courses. I've been on multiple courses. I've been on a 10-week course. I've been on other courses. And that's great. And it helps us to try and understand how we can help our own children.
But you can kind of do it at home nearly, Anthony, really, is it? It's in the absence of services.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But that has to go in tandem with some treatment for the child as well.
And when you've been listening to Joe and Dervla and the other callers that were with us here last Friday and Thursday, you know, all sharing their own stories, what is your biggest concern, Anthony, for the future?
Oh, the future. Same as Dervla and any other family member or family that have a child with a disability. The worry is there's not going to be any support. And like, we're okay now when they're young. There is technically supports there, and they're... but they just don't have the resources to give you any support, but it's supposed to be there. But I think when you go over 18 or whatever the age limit is, you're on your own. And I know I've heard stories of families and people like in their 70s and 80s caring for their elderly child. And they're not a child anymore. They could be like middle-aged child. And they're always concerned if they get sick, if they die, who's going to look after their child. And also, well, my concern with Owen, as Devler, when he gets up, he starts to get older, because when he has a tantrum, he gets violent and he headbutts. He almost broke my nose. He put his head through a glass window because he gets frustrated. He doesn't understand. He can't do something. And that's when he has the meltdown. And it's very difficult. We haven't got any support yet on how to deal with that. So my concern is when he gets older, he's going to be bigger. He's going to be more aggressive, more stronger. And I'm worried he'll hurt himself. Or one of our family. And that's one of my biggest concerns.
That's the big worry. Even for the whole. And I really felt that, you know, Dervla talking about her young daughter as well, you know, and just that kind of, I suppose, managing the other children, the other siblings in the house. And you know, maybe some parents feeling that there'll maybe in later life be an onus on them to take on the role nearly of mum and dad of the kids too. And I know that that's a huge, huge concern for so many parents. Anthony, stay with me if you can just for a minute, because I want to bring in, Shirley is with us. It's 1800 453 106 is the number. Shirley, you've twin boys with autism, is that right?
Yes, Andrea, that's correct. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah. Yes, I do. They're almost five. They will be five in November. And I suppose I knew from a very early age, because they're numbers four and five of my kids. So I knew from an early age that something just wasn't sitting right. So I went down the whole road, assessment of need, etc. And like that guy there, I was told, oh, there's a four-year wait list for an assessment. So we put our money together and we got them privately assessed, and then they were accepted into the services then. But I suppose if we hadn't have done that, things would be very different for them now, because it would be only around now they would be assessed.
Actually going to be seen by somebody, if you were to have waited. Yeah. Yeah.
If I'd and as they say, like, they just drill this into everyone's head, oh, you know, the first 5 years is so important for development, etc., for a child. So we got the assessments done, we paid privately, and we were so lucky we got them into an early intervention preschool, an autism preschool. And I have to say, it completely changed one of my boys.
Did it?
Like, oh my God, I can't express how important it is for any mother or father listening, that if your child has autism, try your best to get an autism preschool, because you have five teachers to one child. There's just almost practically all one-on-one support. Now, when Joe started, Joe was nonverbal. He had really bad sensory processing issues. He had issues around everything, around eating, clothes, everything. And within a few months, he was fully verbal by going to that school, by the care and attention he received. Yeah. Now, Charlie is my other boy, and he actually has an intellectual disability as well. So things are very, very different for Charlie. It's two ends, two completely different ends of the scale, if you like. Charlie is nonverbal. He's still in nappies. He's been sick a lot. You know, and like, I suppose, realistically, he's about the 18-month-old age in regards to development and things like that. So it's really hard for him. Now, he is progressing in school, but he had a lot of issues with tonsils and things like that. And just a point I'd like to make as well, Andrea, if you don't mind. He was quite sick since he was a baby with the tonsils. And we went to two different consultants in two different hospitals, and they both refused to do surgery on my child, even though he was eligible for it. He passed the criteria. But their argument was to me that, oh, he'll kick and roar and scream and he'll hit us and he'll punch us, so we can't do anything with him. And that was the reply I got. And that was wrote in a letter to another hospital consultant. So we were just at the ends of our tether. I was actually going to go up the north and get it done. But I went to my GP, who was fantastic, and he contacted another ENT in Limerick. And we finally got the surgery for him after 3 years of fighting. And it just shows the fact that every single thing is a fight for our children. It's not as easy as picking up the phone and making an appointment. It's not like that. And no more than up in Dublin, we don't have services here in our CDNT. They're non-existent.
Yeah, in your area. What age, sorry, Shirley, what age did you say that the boys are now?
They're going to be five in November, Andrea.
And, you know, it's remarkable, I suppose, for Anthony listening to you, you know, talking about the difference that the early access to the services and the preschool, like the difference that made for you. And, you know, I'm sure that is the fight that so many parents across the country are listening to you today thinking, you know, my God, if we too could get that access, or, you know, that accessibility to be able to get our child in there. Like, it's, I suppose it's the wonder about maybe the difference that it could potentially make. Shirley, our Fiona's with us too, Shirley, on the line. I just want to bring Fiona in for a moment. Your son's nine, Fiona, is that right?
That's right, Andrea, yeah.
Yeah. And so you've been listening to Shirley and Anthony there, and I'm sure their stories resonate with you.
Yeah, I guess. Sorry, I'm trying not to get upset.
No, take your time. Take your time.
I guess I'm a bit different to Shirley and Anthony in that we're just got a recent diagnosis officially of a neurodivergence with autism profiler for our son. And like with many children who are autistic, you know, there can be more than one thing going on. So we also have a recommendation for an ADHD review. And he also has dysgraphia, which is a specific difficulty with writing and spelling. So while our boy has been very much verbal you know, unlike maybe the other children who might be more at the pre-verbal stage. You know, it's just been such a huge challenge to get him reviewed. We've been on an assessment of the need list for 3 years, 3.5 years. Like that, you know, as a child and a toddler, like he's only 18 months younger than his brother. So physically he met his milestones, you know, at public health nurse checkups, nothing kind of really massively stood out. You know, we as parents had no major concerns, and he started junior infants. But I guess it was at the height of COVID when they were still very much in pods and socially distanced. And, you know, he seemed to get on okay in juniors. Mm. But for us, it really struck us in senior infants, though. Like, he's going into third class now, and just school refusal and anxiety became a big thing in our lives. I actually had to go. I'm a teacher myself of over 20 years, and I had to job share to kind of help manage him and his brothers. Like that, he's in the middle of three boys. And it was just the dropping in the morning, like that. We're in a rural area, so they start school a little bit later. And, you know, myself and my husband were finding ourselves increasingly outside the school yard with him for over an hour every morning, just getting so upset about going in, wanting to run away. You know, there were mornings where we both failed to get him in, had to just turn around and bring him home because he was just so distressed about going into school. And just, you know, like that, we thought the school, you know, were doing their best, and they felt maybe he was just a bit anxious. Perhaps he just needed I think the phrase that we've used with this was a bit of OT. So we filled out the CDNT form for community-based OT, like that. We're in Cork in a rural location, and we filled that out. And like those other callers mentioned, we got a letter back saying, and I also ticked the box of psychology because I was concerned about his anxiety, and I could see him regressing. Like, he was getting more and more rigid with his eating, his
sleeping.
And you'd
have been
like,
better insight, you know, than most, Fiona, obviously, but in front of the classroom yourself for years. I mean,
totally.
You know, you'd be well.
And I just, I just had this niggling doubt, like that my gut was screaming at me, and my husband's too. Like, something was just, like, Colin was just getting so distressed, and it was just so hard to see our really clever, like, science-loving boy just kind of falling in on himself, and then getting so, like, he's so good at masking. Like, even when he was so upset, he'd go into school and he'd do his best, but then he'd come home and just, like, the homework, and he'd be so, you know, upset. And, you know, his brothers were getting the brunt of it, as were we, and we were just, like, finding it really hard. Like that, we decided to just split our week, so when Brian was in the office, I'd be at home, and vice versa, and just keep the childcare and the routines at home consistent, because like that, with grandparents and stuff helping out, everyone meant well, but we just needed things to be really smooth.
And how has that played out, Fiona?
Well, I guess we went privately. Again, there was a long list for the private assessments, and like that, I knew I needed not only an autism review, but I knew I also needed an educational assessment because I felt his educational needs couldn't be met in school unless we had a review. And like that, like, we have the paperwork now, and he's going into third class. And I hate, you know, I'm conscious when I'm speaking that there are so many families who would only love an appropriate school placement for their child. And I guess in one sense, you know, we're fortunate that we have him in the local school. But, you know, with his reports now, they have recommended, you know, a different journey into second level. And we've huge concerns as parents now, like listening to some of your callers last week, like, you know, like we've a 6 month plus wait list now for assistive technology. I know in my own school, the department lost the whole file of assistive technology applications for my school last year. So we as a staff had to scramble to get all the reports back in and all the paperwork because the file was just lost, and we didn't want kids to lose out in the granting of their technology.
Which is so another Colin, question around that. Yeah. But anyway, so it was in anyway, and the form got in, and how has that panned out for you?
Well, I'd say I'd be lucky if I hear anything before Christmas. Like that, I'm kind of waiting for him to go back to school.
Waiting,
he's already upset about going back to school. Like this year, we were fortunate he made a bit of progress in that he was in a class of 15. with SNA support and breaks during the year. And like that, the day we got him blocks of private OT, but like we live in a rural location, mm-hmm. so it's a long drive to bring him to OT. So then you're dropping him back to school, and you know, like it's you're in a cycle of it constantly. And like that, this year now he's going into a third class split with half of fourth, so there's going to be an extra 12 to 14 kids in his class of 15, and there's other children who will also need the support of the SNA, and she's covering a few rooms, and like the school do their best, and we're fortunate we're in the community, and the children in his class are very good to him and they really do their best. But you know, the worry is now he's getting older, and his brothers, find it really hard.
Of course they do. And that's the one thing even Dervla talked about last week as well, you know, that impact on other siblings and the home and concern around that as well. And it's hard not to get why you and your husband are concerned about all of this, Fiona. What is the one thing? What's the one thing that would help you guys out? I mean, what bit of assistance or what form of assistance might help?
We've applied for the domiciliary care allowance because like that, we're like $6,000 into private assessments now and reports and therapies. And while we have health insurance, like the domiciliary care allowance, it's not means tested. It's supposed to be there to support families like ours to care for our children. Again, I applied for that in June, filled out all the forms. My GP did. They got back on to me a couple of weeks ago when we were on holiday saying that the GP never sent the form in. He did. So the kind man that he is, he filled it out again and sent it by registered post and emailed me on the proof of the postage. Mm. So I contacted him and said, look, everything's in.
It's gone in.
And me being a teacher, I sent all hard copies of the reports and the forms by registered post. And still we've heard absolutely nothing. Right. Crickets. I actually contacted a local councillor last week about it, saying, look, this is our story. Like in 2026, me and my husband, you know, we both had jobs since we were 17. Like, I would love to be teaching full time.
It's not feasible given this.
It's just not possible. No, like,
given
you know,
the circumstances, as you've described.
We used to be there at short notice. Like, there was a time there during the year where he fell and he, you know, hurt his tooth. And like, you know, I had to kind of down tools in my own school and drive out to collect him. And we're just, like, there's just no support. Like, you know, we're in a rural place. Like, even if there was before and after school care, even if there was school-based therapies, you know, where the OTs and the SLTs came in. I know when I started teaching first, that was the model, and they totally moved away from it. Like, I know from a union perspective, what would help is just...
It's trying to actually get the resources to... It's trying to get the resources to be able to do that. You can hear the exhaustion, Fiona, you know, in your voice and talking to us today, and it's never easy to share stories and experiences like this. You're talking about your own personal family circumstances, but we do appreciate you sharing that with us on the programme. Fiona Shirley Anthony, you can listen back to the other callers we were speaking to. It's all on the Go Loud app. You can subscribe there to Lunchtime Live. If you want to share your own story, drop us an email. You can do that either.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.